You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. Halloween style. As we're going to be breaking down the Halloween Monday Night Football matchup between the Chicago Bears and the Minnesota Vikings. Steve Merrill will join us. We're going to be breaking it down with Tony Cincotta. We'll talk about the World Series. And in honor of Halloween, we're going to kick it Walking Dead style. Lou Temple will join us on the program. The coolest Axl since Axl Rose. So we got a ton of stuff to get to on the program. Let's cut the small talk because it's time for... Now, another National Football League Sunday is in the books. And, of course, Who Ruined Your Sunday has turned into a very popular segment. We should just rename this segment from Who Ruined Your Sunday to Andy Dalton Ruined My Sunday. Your day of reckoning is going to come, Dalton. I swear. How come it's Kim Kardashian that got locked up in a closet instead of you? I hope, kids, break your windows and cover your dumbass house with eggs tonight. As once again, Andy Dalton ruins my Sunday. I'd rather see Hillary Clinton naked than bet on Andy Dalton and the Bengals ever again. Andy Dalton, I don't want to hate on you, dude. You seem like a nice enough guy. But you're also the type of dumbass that would win a lottery and somehow wash your jeans with a ticket inside of it. You're the type of dude that picks up the hot chick at the bar, gets back home, but you can't get it up. I've defended Andy Dalton. I've defended Marvin Lewis. No more. No more. You are dead to me, Andy Dalton. And so are the Cincinnati Bengals. You once again ruined my Sunday for the last time. Now, as much as I want to blame Andy Dalton, I have some hatred and some disdain for the coaches as well. When your stupid-ass quarterback picks up a first down on a scramble and he turns the ball over every three freaking snaps, maybe it's not a good idea to throw a bomb. Maybe you should just run a couple of plays and kick a game-winning field goal. But evidently, this crazed mass man is smarter than most offensive coordinators are. And, you know, I guess I should have been prepared for what was to come. As the Cincinnati Bengals and the Washington Redskins kicked off in the morning. Little early morning overtime. Somehow I had over 54 and a half in-game bet. You know, oh, we go to overtime and 54 stays under the number somehow. And that's just the way that it went. As the San Diego Chargers and Phillip Rivers, the Ned Diddley Flanders of the National Football League. And once again, this proves why. God has no interest in who wins football games. Because if he did, the Chargers would win more because nobody prays more than Phillip Rivers. Well, you better pray some more, Phil. You know, I don't know why you guys get to the two-yard line and you throw the ball four times in a row. You once again ruined my Sunday. Except you're not on the same hit list. You're not on the same list as the Cincinnati Bengals. And then the day wraps up with the Philadelphia Eagles. Somehow I got a plus 190 money line play, and I can't close that out because they screw that up. When it's all said and done, I actually ended up winning money somehow. But I remember the losses more than the wins. But like Mick Jagger said, you get what you want to sometimes. You'll never get what you need because who's going to end up ruining your Sunday? It's going to be somebody, isn't it? And we can go on and on with the bad beats. And there were a lot of bad beats. There were a lot of bad beats across the board. Screw jobs across the board. As the Atlanta Falcons, I might have survived my survivor pick, but I didn't survive laying the minus three because the crooked National Football League referees once again tried to hand a game to Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Dan Quinn was as close as I am to this camera trying to call a timeout. He couldn't get that timeout, and that ruined my Sunday. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. G- Game Time Decisions live on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. So listen, we got a great show lined up. We're trying to track down Steve Merrill right now. Lou Temple from The Walking Dead. Axel from The Walking Dead. Season 3 is going to join us this afternoon on the program. Axel from The Walking Dead also turns out to be a pretty good baseball player as well. Was an MVP in college. Was a professional scout in the minor league system of the Houston Astros. So we'll talk some Walking Dead and some World Series. That's pretty cool. Tony Cincata on the radar today. He's pretty cool as well. So, man, that was an explosive who ruined your Sunday. As I think I was actually angrier than Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees ever actually could have been. Seriously, like, what a screw job, man. I lay -3 in the Bengals game. The game goes to overtime. Numerous opportunities to win the game. Dolan just turns the ball over repeatedly. Like I said, he's a good kid. He's a nice guy. You know, I don't like hating on him, but he's actually probably cost me like over $100,000 now over the years. And I can't help but just not like him anymore. It's like, it's over, dude. Like, you're on that same list as Bob Wickman and James Harden. Bob Wickman is an athlete that probably, like, you know, this guy cost me probably about $150,000. Fat-ass reliever in the old days with the Yankees and the Braves. Guy was terrible. He was so bad, actually, that I actually wrote a letter to the Atlanta Braves complaining. Like, no joke. Actually, and I did it live on the air. I was hosting a radio show, and I got my producer, who was a very smart guy. We wrote a letter to the Atlanta Braves demanding that Bob Wickman be put on a diet program or the strength and conditioning coach of the Atlanta Braves gets fired because Bob Wickman's a useless fat ass that's continuously costing me money. Surprisingly enough, the Braves actually responded. And they said, we're very happy. We're sorry that you're frustrated with the Atlanta Braves. We're very happy with our strength and conditioning coach. As a joke, my buddy actually ordered me Bob Wickman's pants off of eBay. Like, I don't know, what am I going to do with Bob Wickman's pants? I have them in like 3 baggies because I don't want to touch Bob Wickman's nutsack. All right, we got a lot of stuff to get to. We track down Steve Merrill with us.
I'm here, guys.
What's going on, Steve?
Steve's not here, but Steve went to the sports book at Caesars this week and got a replacement.
I like it, Steve. I like it. You know what? I feel a little naked now after the intro. What's that?
There you go. You took your mask off. There we go.
Yeah, I took it off earlier. I don't know.
You took it off now.
Yeah, I was sweating like Huma Abedin talking to the FBI.
Yeah, no, I'm sweating with this. I actually had some Billy Bob teeth from a couple years ago with braces, but I couldn't find them in time for the show. That's why I was running behind, and I didn't want to offend. I didn't know if we were on in England now, so I didn't want to offend any viewers over there.
It would have been good, actually, Steve. You would have showed up with a grill. Lucky Steve.
Now, these are great. There's like 3 teeth, and they got braces on top of it. But the thing is, though, I can't talk well with them, so they wouldn't have lasted long.
You actually look pretty cool, man. I think I'd stick with it, Steve.
This is how I make my maximum limit bets on NFL Sunday at Caesars.
That's the new.
This hat, Gabe, is from the mid-90s. It's a silk hat. You can't tell. It's a silk Caesars Palace hat. And I found it in my Halloween box with the wig. I was looking for the wig, and I found the hat. I forgot I even had it.
Steve Merrill with us. There's going to be a lot of crazy costumes tonight at Soldier Field. And there's going to be a guy dressed up as a quarterback. His name's going to be Cutler on the back.
He's
pretending to be a real quarterback. Yeah, Jay Cutler returns tonight. We got the World Series, Steve. We got the election. We got crazy NASCAR that they couldn't keep score. Let's start off actually with the World Series. So Cubs survived Game 6 Tuesday night in Cleveland. I saw an interesting story earlier today on ESPN, actually, about teams that ended their curses. The Cleveland Cavaliers ended their curse this year. They were down 3-1. 2004 Boston Red Sox, of course, were down 3-0 to the New York Yankees. So we've seen in the past, Steve, these curses, sometimes it takes a lot of drama to get there.
Yeah, actually, going into last night, the Indians had a 78% chance of winning the series up 3-1. Now it's about a 70% chance. So the odds didn't really change much from that win because Cleveland was a 2-1 underdog last night in Game 5. Cleveland still should win this series, but they're a dog once again in Game 6. You know, we saw him as a dog at home in Game 1. Tomlin against Arrieta. I mean, Chicago has the pitching edge, and this very well could go 7. You get a feeling that Cleveland finds a way to win one of the 2 games. big difference in this series so far has been the offense, though. And the real question for me is, you know, have the Cubs started to heat up offensively? They only had three runs last night, so I'm not sure that's the case.
Yeah, I think I'll be taking a look at the under on Tuesday night, actually, Steve. It's going to be an extremely tight baseball game. The weather will be coming into play. It's going to be cold in Cleveland. And plus these games, both these teams just having a hard time putting runs on the board.
Yeah, going into last night, Chicago was averaging 1.8 runs in the series, Cleveland 3.8. So that's a pretty big difference. Of course, they had a couple of high-scoring games, but the Cubs have been shut out in two of the five games still. And the three runs last night, they kind of won by default. Cleveland had some chances also with some base runners that, you know, got into scoring position. I just think the real question is, you know, can Arrieta pitch up to his ability? He's been very shaky over the last couple of months, and really this season in general after winning the Cy Young.
Yeah, that's evidence of the fact, Steve. The Cubs are 4-1 in the playoffs with John Lester's on the hill. They're 5-5 with everybody else.
Yeah, that's a crazy stat, and especially for a left-handed pitcher that's afraid to throw to first. You talk about a Halloween curse. My goodness. Lester should dress up as a right-handed pitcher. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. The guy literally will not throw to first base as a southpaw. I've never seen that before.
The Tribe are now minus 240 series favorites. Cubs, if you believe in miracles, Cubs are plus 200 right now.
You know, there might actually be a little bit of value with Chicago now at 2-1. I said at the beginning of the series, you know, when we talked about the first game, I thought there was some value with Cleveland at plus 200. And now there actually might be a little buyback value with Chicago. You get a feeling they probably win Game 6 with that pitching edge if Arrieta shows up, and then it's a do-or-die Game 7, and they are still the best team in the league.
Yeah, and I guess it would be in a Game 7 situation. I guess it would be Kyle Hendricks, Kluber for sure.
Right.
John Lester at this stage, I mean, the guy can't pitch every 2 days, and Hendricks is solid. And even that game that went over on Saturday, Steve, there was that spurt of runs, right? You know, I'm going to be looking at the under on Tuesday, but we're not there yet. We got the other Chicago teams, center of the sports universe right now, Cleveland and Chicago, the Minnesota Vikings and the Chicago Bears, Halloween throwdown at Soldier Field. You and I have talked about this. It's more like wounded Soldier Field as of late. 2-12 straight up, last 14 home games. And, of course, they're 4-10 against the spread in their last 14 home games. But they actually have a pretty good track record playing against the Minnesota Vikings in Chicago, Steve.
Yeah, the other thing that jumps out to me is, I mean, the Bears are obviously a money burner, 1-6 straight up and against the spread this year. And we keep talking about it, like you said, Gabe, year after year they've been one of the worst point spread teams, and that normally evens out. You know, teams that are bad usually eventually get some value. Minnesota, the exact opposite, 5-1 straight up and against the spread. That only loss came last week after their bye week, just like the Eagles lost back-to-back games after their bye. Minnesota played really well, then lost last week. The Cowboys should have lost last night in that same situation. After five straight wins, they had the bye week. Very fortunate win in overtime. So the question becomes, does Minnesota bounce back here in the second week? You know, you look at Philly in that situation earlier in the month. They lost back-to-back games after the 3-0 start and the bye week. So wouldn't be totally shocked to see Minnesota a little flat here. And the fact remains, this is not a good offensive team. In fact, they're averaging 2.5 yards per rush this year. For a team that's 5-1 to only average 74 rushing yards a game shows how bad that rushing offense has been.
Yeah, and they're not a very good passing team either. Sam Bradford's
right.
Stats are good because he's efficient, 7 touchdowns, 1 interception, etc. But overall, the production's just not there. The points aren't there. You know, the Vikings throw for 240 yards a game. They can't run the football. This is a team that's predicated on special teams and turnovers and defense. You know, they have the best turnover differential in the National Football League, Steve, at plus 11. You compound that by the fact that Jay Cutler returns, who has been known to turn the football over in the past. You know, it could spell disaster, but I don't know if it's Halloween here, Steve, but I'll tell you what, man, I'm in a $5,000 survivor contest. Started with 50 people. It's down to 10. I'm one of the 10. And I think about 7 of them are the Minnesota Vikings tonight. I just didn't like it, man. And you know what I did? I took the Atlanta Falcons as my survivor pick yesterday. And my God, did I sweat that one out. I got screwed over for the -3, Steve. And I had the Falcons, but I had a ton on the over. But I was happy to survive the survivor pick with the Falcons yesterday. I tell you, I think we got an upset in the making tonight, Steve.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Gabe. That's the way to play these survivor pools. Minnesota is the most popular survivor pick. Some of the contests I looked at, it's over one-third of the field remaining, even ones that have thousands of people in it. And that's what you want to do. You want to try to maybe take a second play and then hope that other game loses. By the way, yesterday, every NFL team was -5.5 or less The Patriots are the biggest favorite yesterday, and most people had already used them in their survivor pool. So a lot of people could have gotten eliminated yesterday, yet most of the favorites still won, like the Falcons, the Broncos, the Cowboys, who should have lost. I do get a feeling that could happen with Minnesota tonight and knock a lot of people out of those contests.
I had a lot of bad beats yesterday, Steve. I did well because of my in-game picks and the totals, but I had the Bengals -3. They go to overtime, you know, and game ends in a tie. Sure. I had the Eagles last night, +200 on the money line.
So did I. 7-0, Gabe, going into Sunday night for the weekend. I would have been 8-0 in that Eagles play, half a point.
Unbelievable. Huh? Yeah. Like, just this is a screw job, man. Exactly. We ended up losing. I was so inevitable it was going to happen. I had the Chargers, Steve. They got first and goal from the 2-yard line. They throw the ball 4 times in a row.
Well, and the Cowboy game was really painful because they would have kicked the field goal had they not changed that overtime rule. They wouldn't have gone for it on 4th-and-1. And you could just see that coming. The minute they won the coin toss, I could see it coming.
Yeah. So did I. So did I. So really, there's not a lot of logic here in saying to take the Chicago Bears. But, you know, there's the NFL is the no logic league often. It's risky. What do you think about Cutler coming back here? He's better than Matt Barkley. And it's funny. Cutler even knows that Fox doesn't like him. And he said, I don't take it personal. It's just a business. I'm going to go out there and play the best I can.
Yeah, I mean, Cutler's so erratic, but the backup quarterbacks are even worse. So I think it is a positive. And the fact he's been off for a little bit, maybe he comes back stronger. And the one thing I'll point out about the total, I mean, obviously at 40, it's very hard to play under 40 in the NFL nowadays. But then again, with that Vikings team, they're just a pure under team. You know, you look at the no offense, a lot of defense. But the one thing that jumps out at me, not only do they struggle to run the ball, but Chicago's running attack's been very weak this year as well. So when both teams can't run the ball, that sometimes actually leads to more passing, which could help the over.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to take the over in the sacks tonight, Steve, 4.5. I got to believe they're going to get to Cutler. That's the thing with Cutler. He's not horrible, but it's like whatever other quarterback's back there, there's less sacks. They just get rid of the ball quicker than Cutler does. It'll be interesting to see if Jeffrey can get on track. But, yeah, I'm not taking the money line, Steve, but I'm going to take a shot with the +4.5 in the Bears.
Yeah, what's interesting about Cutler is he just turns the ball over. Like you said, not just interceptions, but he does fumble more than the average quarterback. And the Vikings, like you said, they've been forcing a ton of turnovers. In fact, their loss at Philly last week was only the second game all season in which they had an offensive turnover, and they had 4 of them. They'd had only one turnover the entire season in their first 5 games. You know, so there's 2 ways to look at that. There's a little bit of a do theory there where they're probably going to start turning the ball over a bit more. And on the road, hostile environment, Monday night, you know, maybe that happens again this week.
All right. Speaking of Halloween nightmares, how about NASCAR yesterday? You know, we'll get to the election in a second. And there's accusations of the election being rigged all the time. Now there's accusations that the chase for the cup is tainted. You know, strong accusations, actually. Denny Hamlin says that Kevin Harvick stole a lap. That he's actually, that, you know, he was down a lap. And for people who were watching a football and was unaware of what was going on, at Martinsville, they have green pit stops. So basically, guys are still on the track. Guys are going to the pits. And it caused complete chaos. Carl Edwards crashed, and they lost the running order of the race. Basically, they couldn't figure it out. So they ran under caution for 30 laps. I think they just should have stopped the race, actually, Steve, because it's pretty confusing. And NASCAR is saying, no, we ended up getting it right when it was all said and done. But nobody really knows. Basically, almost everybody but like 3 or 4 drivers was probably down a lap.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not a good situation. What's funny, though, is Hamlin's in pretty good spot right now. He's like only 5 behind the top, and Harvick's actually on the outside looking in. We almost get a situation again when Harvick might have to win a race. Carl Edwards is my dark horse this round. He definitely has to win.
He's in a lot of trouble. Yeah, that's the thing. But, when you're in the field of 8 and you crash into the wall, you got big problems, Steve.
a belt broke. You know, it's just like that. That's the thing about the round of, you know, the 3-round elimination, the 3-race elimination for the next round is that, you know, just some random thing goes wrong when you've had a good season overall. And Truex had that problem last week. Martin Truex maybe wins this championship if he doesn't have that bad break last week. And speaking of Truex, he ran well this week. He's at a cookie-cutter track this week at Texas, which he has dominated those tracks this year. And he's out of the chase, so he has nothing to do but try to win. So he's going to be a tough guy to go against.
And now that Jimmy's in, like literally and figuratively, yeah, don't take a look at him. He has no reason right now. He's cashed his ticket to Homestead.
2 ways to look at it, though. He also doesn't have to play it safe. You know, the guys I worry about are the guys that have to play it safe. Look, 2 races ago, the Gibbs guys, Bush, Kenseth, and it might have been Carl Edwards is the other guy. They ran back in the back of the 30s, you know, to Talladega, and we talked about guys maybe doing that. They made no effort whatsoever. They just killed fantasy players a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, and it's risky. It's almost like football teams playing not to get hurt, right, Steve? You're going to get hurt. Like, if you're trying to, if you're racing for 3 hours, just worried about something the whole time, you're going to, you know, something bad eventually is going to happen. All right, we got to get out of here, Steve. But Hillary Clinton now minus 300. We're 8 days away from the election. Hillary's minus 300. Donald Trump's plus 275, Steve.
Well, when we did the live show Friday, as the news was breaking, Hillary went from 83% to 72% of the betting market. She's now at 75%. So it was actually a little bit of an overreaction. And I think what people have realized now is that nothing more is coming out in the next 8 days other than what's come out. So she's going to win this election. But I'll tell you right now, Gabe, I want a sports book to put odds on who will be the president in a year from now. And I would put some money on Tim Kaine at plus money.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually, as far as it's crazy that Tim Kaine, and nobody even knows who he is. You do, obviously,
right?
Because you're in Virginia. But I agree with you. And in fact, they've already the Republicans have brought it up, actually, in stating that if she wins the vote next week, Steve, they might impeach her before she's inaugurated.
Yeah, or soon after. Yeah,
they're going to impeach her like immediately. Like the second, exactly. Like, she's going to get impeached. And there's so much scandal under there. There's like more bodies than it, you know, at Mike Myers' basement, Steve. She's got a lot of problems, man. She's going to get impeached. Between her health and impeachment, there's no way in hell she gets through 4 years of being president.
Yeah, and the good news is Tim Kaine might be the best of the three choices anyway.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you know, I try to respect Tim Kaine, but he's just such a lackey for her, you know?
Oh, yeah, he's girly.
He really is, huh? Like,
for Halloween, he dressed up as a macho man.
Looks better than dressing up as a girl. Like I've always, you know, people who dress up as women on Halloween, men, like, just come out and say you want to dress up as a woman. Like, and you're using Halloween as an excuse.
I've said all along.
It's Halloween. I didn't do anything. I picked up this mask here in the studio, right? Like, I'll do this because, it's kind of like male figure skating. It's
you and I, we take more time handicapping the games than coming up with our costumes. And that's the way it should be. My clients don't want me spending 2 days figuring out my costume when I could be looking at games.
No, you know, exactly, Steve. You know, time is pretty limited. But at this point, like you said, so you don't think there's any shot Trump can pull this out, huh?
No, I think there is. I mean, the Brexit odds were at 16% the day of the vote, and it happened. Trump's at 24% now in the betting market. So yeah, it could definitely happen. The big question for me is, does it rally enough of those Republicans that weren't going to vote for him? The problem he had was that he has somebody of his own party that's not voting for him that, you know, by default, that makes it very difficult to win. But maybe this rallies a few of them.
You know what as well, Steve? It's unfortunate, but the announcement with the FBI investigation being reopened on Monday, it moved the markets, but it hasn't changed the needle of public opinion. Right. We didn't learn anything new. Oh, Hillary Clinton and Huma, they're all shady with emails and classified information. It's almost just made everybody double down on their own team. It hasn't really, like, and there's not a mass exodus of Democrats. Oh, I can't be associated with Hillary anymore. We already knew this, really, right?
Yeah, no, what it did, Gabe, was it put it back in the media spotlight, the issue that the media had been covering up, because they are in the tank for Hillary. So it made the media a little more of a level playing field, but not enough to change the election. And if you look at the Electoral College odds and the betting odds, she lost about 20 points. So she lost a state or two right now in the predicted odds, but not enough to lose the election yet.
That's how we're going to have to look at this, Steve. And I'm going to jump in. I've seen the books already have the numbers up from state to state. Maybe we'll take a look at some of the states on Friday, actually.
He's now favored in Florida. He was an underdog Friday. Yeah. He's now favored. So that's been the change of 20-some electoral votes, because that's 29 votes. That's actually been the only change in the betting markets, to be honest.
And, you know, Steve, I lived in Nevada. I think I know the people and how they're going to go there a little bit. And it's basically a pick-em, man. And Hillary's going to win Nevada when it's all said and done.
She's at 68% in Nevada. So, yeah, that would be...
The unions are going to put it over the top. Like, all the casino workers and the unions, et cetera, that hate Donald Trump. And, you know, I was surprised to see the odds, Steve. She was only like minus 120, minus 130 to win Nevada.
Yeah, the betting markets have 68%, so it should be about minus 200. The only state that changed was Florida. His odds got better in Arizona and better in Ohio, but he was already favored. But he went from being the dog to now the favorite in Florida, so that's the difference of 29 electoral votes. But he's still down by about 50 electoral votes. So he's going to have to win like Pennsylvania, Nevada, North Carolina, maybe, you know. It's just probably not going to happen. What's crazy, though, is right now he's favored to win Ohio and Florida, but not the election. That's something we've really probably never seen in recent history.
Yeah, no, that's, you're right. The it's almost like football betting this year. Throwing everything you know with the electoral maps, Dave. Like, it's going to be the weirdest map ever, almost like the NFL playoffs. We got to get out of here. There's a cool Steve Merrill. We got a name for this, Steve?
It was me all along, Gabe.
Stop. Thanks,
Gabe. It was me all along. Thanks, Gabe.
Steve Merrill. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions. We are live on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Life is all about timing. And, you know, everything just seemed to fall into place for today's program, being Halloween and the fact that Lou Temple, who, as I stated earlier, the coolest Axl since Axl Rose, was going to join us. Yeah, we were going to talk baseball with Lou. This was planned. And it wasn't planned that Lou was going to join us on Halloween. And I'm actually really enjoying this look with the mask, man. I think that the Yankees jersey just really adds to the insanity of this. But I want to do a serious interview with Mr. Lou Temple. You know him as Axel, season 3 of The Walking Dead, currently starring in Shangri-La Suite in selected theaters, New York and Los Angeles. Lou Temple joins us. What's going on, Lou? Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, Gabe, thanks for having me. And yeah, this is Escape from the Bronx that you're repping right there.
Yeah, it's not too bad, huh? It's not too bad. You know, I just happened to be wearing the Yankee jersey, and I came in, and the mask was lying around. And it's a good, like, it wouldn't work if I was wearing a San Diego Padres jersey. You know what I'm saying?
No,
the New York makes it work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're ready to go door to door trick or treating, and I think you're right on point. You could drop into one of the movies that I do and make it all crazy.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty crazy. I'm crazy in real life, but I am a fan of yours, and I say that because, you know, you're a deep dude, and you know, you can talk about anything. We're on a sports network here. We got like 10 minutes or whatever. So we'll try to blast through as much as we can. But I will ask you about The Walking Dead and the turn that has taken, the premiere last week. Were you sitting at home like as blown away as everyone else going, damn, like this is just over the top? I wasn't blown away by the violence or anything like that. I was just so damn impressed by the acting, man, and the intensity.
Thank you.
Like, it's just... You know, when I saw Rick's hair, it wasn't like, oh, they just poured water on it. It looked like a guy that was sweating for real. Just so freaking real, Lou.
Well, I think you're right on point, Gabe. And what I would say, beside all the mayhem that went on and the trepidation about what was going to happen, in the moment that Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Andrew Lincoln square off and go eye to eye and hold that place, acting is 45% of eye contact, and that's eye contact with camera in the lens. And those two did that, and that is like two great athletes squaring up against each other. And for Andrew Lincoln to hold and make Jeffrey Dean, I saw Jeff's eyes flicker a couple times, but when Negan drilled right down in there and they held that, they were able to carry that scene for two solid minutes, which is a great, that's sudden death overtime. That's as good as it gets. So to me, that's what that episode represented, was fine craftsmanship.
Now, I've seen you, obviously you get talked, you get asked about The Walking Dead all the time. But what fascinates me about the show is the different meanings that it has to people. I think to a lot of millennials, it's a cool zombie show. And, you know, it's funny because I remember last year, the episode that got criticized the most was my favorite one, when it was just Morgan and his experiences, and it was deep. I like the deep mental stuff, and I saw you in an interview say, the good thing about this show is they don't dumb it down. You either get it or you don't, and most of the audience will get the nuances of the characters, but it means something different to everyone else, and in a crazy way, and I'm not even like a diehard Walking Dead guy. I sort of jumped on the bandwagon a couple of seasons ago, but something that stuck to me that dealt with a lot of personal life in my own personal life, Lou, with deaths, multiple deaths of people close to me, was something that Glenn said once. We live for those who can't. And it's amazing that a show on a Sunday night cable television network would somehow, like, those words would somehow stick to me too much. And I've always just wanted to say, you know what? I wish I could meet the actor, the writer that wrote that, because not just it made me stronger somehow. And I don't get this. I'm a bitter, jaded, degenerate gambler that's lived on the street, Lou. I'm not the type of guy that, you know, is going to get touched by TV shows. But that line, man, it's carried me.
Well, I think it's exactly what the show does. And so that line carries you, and there's many others that carry several others emotionally. So the Walking Dead, the walkers, as we call them, some people refer to them as zombies. They're just a metaphor for life or the obstacles in life. And so as we get up every morning, not one of us doesn't have to survive. You, me, everybody has to deal with debt, mortgage, a loved one who's suffering from a sickness, college, health insurance, whatever that is. And that's really the obstacle of life and survival. And I think that's why the show resonates so well with the audience, is that it's easy to put yourself in those shoes. And although not many of us face life and death, metaphorically, we do it each day when we wake up. So I think it really connects with the fan base.
Lou, let's talk some baseball, because people, I think probably most people look at you as an actor and unaware of your passion for baseball, the fact that you were a bullpen catcher. How cool is that, man? Like, it's just great. Like, I used to be the host of the Expos postgame show.
Nice.
And the bullpen catcher got busted for dealing drugs to the players and the visiting teams. And I was thinking, what a great gig. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the place to be.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on the inside and you fly under the radar just enough. Yeah. I played baseball starting at age 8 and was absolutely caught up with the fever of baseball passion, like most baseball fans are. And it's never wavered for me. I still have the same dream today that I had as a 12-year-old boy, dreaming that I'm playing in the major leagues. And I love that about that type of passion for this type of sport, or that type of passion for anything, for that matter. So then I went on and played in high school, got a college scholarship, drafted by the Seattle Mariners, went out, played in the minor leagues, Seattle, went in, caught in their bullpen, traded to Houston, worked with the Astros in their minor league system, worked my way up into becoming a scout, and then assistant director of minor leagues and scouting. So I've seen baseball from every end of it, and it's never changed as being a great game. I recognize the paradigm shift as we're into the world of analytics now. Being a gambler, you may appreciate that. Maybe people are catching on to your number system a little bit more than they used to. I recognize that the game still has to be played, like Rick and Negan did the other day, mano y mano.
And you know, the movie too, for the learning to hit the curve, that's sort of what you did, right? You're a minor league guy going out there. And you know, I know you were I saw you talking once about how you scouted Jeff Judin. Of course, big fireball, a big guy. And you know,
made
he pitched
it
in
at the Expos.
Yeah, exactly. And a real classic on Canada Day once against the Jays and Roger Clemens, like a 1-0. Type of classic, but a real badass. There is something about baseball, isn't it? That Field of Dreams thing, in which, look, my grandfather played professional hockey, so I grew up around sports and stuff like that. But the only thing that you get goosebumps in that, like when the Expos lost, it was like losing a loved one, Lou. Like there is something about baseball that is inherently planted in our soul somehow. More like football's big, but baseball is just, it's in us somehow.
Well, you have to participate in baseball. Football, you can drop in the fourth quarter and get caught up in the game and walk away, win or lose. I mean, the passionate fans don't. They're there from pregame all the way to the end. But baseball, in order to consume it, you have to start from any one and play all the way through to any nine. There's no clock. There's no timeouts per se. And you're just invested in it. And it's like good theater. You have to participate in it. In the audience, you have to be a part of the game. It also has an incredible zen-like quality. Once you are participating, you can kind of settle in and realize, I can participate in this and think of other things and relate and hold conversations. And real baseball fans can have a whole visit in and amongst during the game and catch up with somebody, which is adorable.
It's more of a community. You're right, in a baseball stadium. Football game is a bunch of drunk dudes yelling, knock his head off, right? It's a different element. All right, time's just flying by here, Lou, and I know you're a busy man.
It's so good to visit with you. But I love that you have New York. I think it's so interesting that these two teams that are playing in the World Series, both Chicago and Cleveland, post up on two guys that started their season right there in the Bronx with Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman.
Crazy, huh? Two dudes that bring some serious heat. So we'll wrap it up with this. So it's almost like The Walking Dead. You've got somebody's got to take a bat to the head here, man. You've got Indian fans and you got Cub fans. And I've always said, or you can say 108 years or 71 years or 48 years. What difference does it make? Everyone suffered. So somebody's got to take the bat to the head. Who's it going to be, man? Who's going to lose the World Series and take it to the skull?
I think Cleveland will, believe it or not. And I wouldn't have said that last night. But watching Chicago rally to come back into the series, I see now. And their pitching sets up really good. I think Arrieta will be fantastic. And then we've got to see Kluber again in probably Game 7. He'll be not as well rested, but I think that makes no difference. But I see Chicago putting a little momentum into the world, and Cleveland perhaps suffering a little bit.
Yeah, they've been down. Well, at least they had the Cavs win last year. But it's going to be high drama, man. Now that there's no football in the way. Tuesday, Wednesday, it's like now we got a World Series, man. Now it's a feel good moment before next week's election, which it won't be such a feel good moment for a lot of people.
It could be Walking Dead coming.
Exactly. The November the 9th, that might be The Walking Dead. Hey, Lou, it's great to get you on the show, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Enjoy, Gabe. Keep out there, putting it out there. And, it's a good world, so be part of it, right?
Yeah, damn right, man. We live for those who can't, Lou.
I appreciate that. So does Stephen Yin and Glenn. Thank you.
There's Lou Temple with us. Really enjoyed that. We're going to spend, the entire program, so much stuff. He's a deep dude, but when you got 8-9 minutes on a sports network, there's only so much you can do. Tony Cincotta joins me next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues as Morenci takes Manhattan. Thanks to Lou Temple, The Walking Dead, joining us on the program. How cool is that, man? It's Halloween. We got the dude from The Walking Dead on the show. Nice guy, too, man. We could have went on and on and on. And, truth be told, we probably should have, considering the guy that we got coming up right now is Tony Cincotta. But I love Tony, and I specifically asked to bring Tony on the show today. Tony Cincotta joins us, the Tony Cincotta. Tony, how you doing, Tony?
Gabe, it's interesting you choose Manhattan. Because to be honest, if people go to Rockin' Riley's, which is our Fantasy Sports Network pub, right? 7th and 35th, right in the Manhattan, and you mention the name Gabe Morenci, you're not going to get any discount. You're not even going to get in the place. They'll make you stay outside.
Yeah, exactly. I always tell people... no, don't drop my name. I get people all the time asking me for references. Get them a job in the sports industry. I'm like, because everyone loves me, right? You want me to be their recommendation?
That's
it's like Hillary Clinton writing a recommendation letter. Gabriel Morenci is very honest.
So we'll never see Hillary Clinton on one of these. I don't think Hillary Clinton is ever going to be on one of these. But we got plenty of Yankees that get these.
Yeah. So what's your Halloween costume here? What is this, Tony? You're a little flat today. What's going on?
I don't have a Halloween costume. You know what's crazy about that? I take the kids out, right? And the kids, they're into the WWE, so I get them going out as Eric Young.
Stop. So you got the beard going there? Young, so what do you got to do? You get a Nashville Predator hat, a beard, and a Nashville Predators jersey, a Bills hat, and a beard.
That's the way to go, right? You know what? If you go Eric Young, nobody else is going to have that costume, including Eric Young's kids.
I can't believe I didn't get to the point and the fact off the intro. I got too excited and rattled. But I wanted to bring up the fact that somebody threw a dildo on the field at the Bills game yesterday.
Yeah, it's actually a reaction to the Detroit Red Wings getting so much claim for that octopus. In Buffalo, they wanted to one-up them. So now that's going to be a tradition. Every time they let up 40-plus points, a dildo is going to come out in the field.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I have a couple of suggestions for what Rex Ryan could use with that dildo.
Well, don't involve his wife or YouTube videos. That's already been done.
He's into feet, Tony. He's into feet.
Okay.
The foot fetish. All right. So, hey, World Series. What's your take here? Are the Cubs alive now?
Yeah, they're still alive. They're the better team. And you look at it, if you put it in the matchup, they got two guys that can really pitch coming down the stretch. You're asking Kluber to do it on short days rest twice. He's been awesome. The bullpen's awesome. I still expect Cleveland to win, but Chicago isn't dead by any stretch of the imagination. And in fact, I'm willing to bet they'll be favored in both games.
Yeah, you know what? It's a strange phenomenon, actually. They won't be favored with Kluber on the hill, but they're favored with Tomlin here. Yet the Cubs are favored to win the game. It's like minus 140, Tony. They're plus 200 to win the series. So, yeah, the odds makers are calling for seven games here, which, you know, it might not be a bad bet, actually, that you just, you know, you bet the Cubs here and then you ride it out and you buy the Indians back. It's been a real roller coaster the whole time.
Yeah, the worst thing in the world is the Indians winning the World Series. I'm rooting for them. I love Terry Francona. He was absolutely wrong by the Boston management, and so I'm glad that he's going to have an ability to win another World Series somewhere else. But the bad thing for baseball is now is everybody's going to go out and try to get these, you know, big 6-7 relievers, have them throw 95 miles an hour for two innings, and every game's going to take 4 hours to play.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know what, Terry Francona, actually, nice guy. I pull for him as well. Former Montreal Expo, Tony. Remember when he actually played? And, you know, I'm sure you know this because, you know, you're a smart guy. But a longtime bench coach, pretty much his right-hand man, Brad Mills. Also, role guys. They were on the bus squad. It was sort of the bench guys of the Expos, the good Expo teams with Carter Dawson and all those guys. Francona was a backup. He was on the bench. But all these role guys sort of went in, you know, and became these smart managers after. And I'll tell you what, Tony, even after the Red Sox won the World Series for the first time, Brad Mills didn't big time me, you know, from the Montreal days. I went to a Red Sox game and all the Boston media, it was a big throng. And he's like, hey, I know you from Montreal. And I was like, can I get a couple of minutes, Skip? And boom. You know, so they're actually nice guys, too.
Well, you're very impressionable, Gabe. That's the thing you had in your advantage. You weren't wearing the hockey mask, but I'm sure you had something very distinctive that Brad just pointed you out.
Yeah, we went to the same strip clubs.
You know, it's funny. Tommy Harper back in the day when he was a coach for the Boston Red Sox, I believe he spent some time in Montreal.
Yeah, he did. Tommy Harper. Yeah.
Meet him all the time at the harness racing track.
Oh, you do? Okay. So time's flying by here, Tony. Cutler returns tonight. Listen, yes. The Bears averaged 270 yards passing this year with the multiple quarterbacks. Jay Cutler's prop is only 218.5 yards. The question is, does he survive the damn game, Tony? How do you see this playing out tonight? Who do you like from a fantasy/prop situation? You like Bradford having some success tonight? Zach Miller, Kyle Rudolph, who catches your eye tonight? But what about Alshon Jeffrey? Is he going to score a damn touchdown ever?
No, he won't score a damn touchdown. They'll target him in tonight's contest. I think he'll be back, and he'll be a little better with Jay Cutler, actually. So if Cutler can stay upright, he's going to get targeted in that contest. But the statistical information that I look at that's alarming to me is the Chicago Bears are the worst team in football at covering wide receivers, yet the Minnesota Vikings don't have one that sticks out. Stephon Diggs has a groin injury. Adam Thielen, is that a guy that we're going to go? He outproduced Stephon Diggs in the last game. So if you're looking for to make a prop bet, I like the over 212 with Jay Cutler, but I would look for a prop bet with Adam Thielen and have an ability to get over, you know, 60-70 yards in tonight's contest against a Bears secondary that's the worst in football covering wide receivers.
What about Kyle Rudolph tonight? 4.5 receptions.
That's going to be close. 5 is a lot. I think I would go under that, to tell you the truth. I think a lot of money will be there. In daily fantasy, his price is actually only $3,300 for tonight's contest. He's being totally disrespected.
It's going to be interesting. This is a classic example because we only got 1 minute here, but you look, both quarterbacks are 5 dimes only, Tony, because you got high-profile guys. You got the Falcons and the Bucks. Is there anyone? What do you do with the money? Everyone's going to have Thursday's guys. So how do you approach this tonight?
The only guy that I'm looking at tonight, I got to go get Matt Asiati. Put him in the backfield. Jacquizz Rodgers left the game with an injury. So you want to have a backfield of Devonta Freeman and Matt Asiati in tonight's game against the Bears in that contest. Because of the split in the Bears' backfield, if you want to go ahead and you want to take a shot on one of those guys, I couldn't see you doing it. But Alshon Jeffery will be laid off, too. You can use him as well in the flex position. If you want to go Adam Thielen, that would be a contrarian play. I would only do it if I put multiple rosters in. I would throw a dagger in there. And if he gets to the end zone, you get a huge differential than everybody else.
And you know what? Actually, play the defenses tonight. The defenses tonight are better than the defense Thursday.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There it is right there. All right, Minnesota's defense is going to be a little pricey, but even the Bears' defense could be worth a look. I'm going to bet a prop, Tony, over 10.5 punts tonight. I don't usually do this.
I love that, Ben.
Yeah, 11 punts.
I'm the only guy that bets under, so I appreciate this. You sit there, you root for punts.
Oh, me too. I'm going to be cheering. Oh, yeah, 3 and out, baby. 3 and out. Let's go.
In the sports bar, rooting for the punter. Woo!
Another punt. Another punt. Bring on the punter. Thanks, Tony.
Take care.
Come back with our plays of the day next. All right, it's time to slash the book. Our plays of the day, Halloween. Let's do this thing. Let's start off with the Chicago Bears. You want to talk about a nightmare? How about betting money on Jay Cutler? But that's exactly what we're going to do. The Chicago Bears are going to upset the Minnesota Vikings tonight. And if they don't, it's going to come down to the wire. Give me the Bears. I got a weird feeling about tonight's game. Let's go Sam Bradford over 20.5 completions. Let's go Jay Cutler over 218.5 passing yards. I think there's going to be a lot of punting in this football game. We don't often give you a punting prop, but let's go over 10.5 punts, over 4.5 sacks. The Vikings might sack Cutler 5 times on their own. The Vikings and the Bears long field goal prop. This one I'm hesitant about. Both their field goal kickers suck. And this guy in Minnesota, he really does suck. He's cost me the long field goal prop on more than one occasion. But I think I could kick a 42.5-yard field goal. So let's go over the number. Weather shouldn't be a factor. A little bit of wind, but weather's not going to be a factor this evening. All right, some NBA basketball, man. We've been tapping this pretty hard so far this year. We're going to take some underdogs tonight. Give me the Brooklyn Nets plus the 6 against the visiting Bulls. Bulls playing a run-and-gun style, track meet style of basketball, averaging 111 points a game. Let's go over the number in the Chicago Bulls and the Brooklyn Nets. Love the Sacramento Kings. Give me the 7 points. They got a new coach, man. Cousins is boogieing. I like the Kings plus the 7. I think the total's too low at over 202. And we wrap it up with the Denver Nuggets and the Toronto Raptors. Raptors opened up the season with a 3-game homestand. They beat Detroit. The game went over the number. They lost to Cleveland. They should have beaten them. They didn't. It went under the number. I don't want to mess with the 7 points tonight, but I am going to take this game to go over the number. I think it's going to be a high-scoring night in the association. Happy Halloween. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.